Hey everyone, happy Mother's Day to all you mums out there today and all incredible women, especially around our church and around our community. You make such a difference. In today's message, we're going to continue to look at the life of Jesus and the conversations he had with people, especially conversation he had with James and John's mother, two of his disciples, who was quite a pushy mum. And we're just going to explore about being pushed into things and also about what our motives are. So encourage you, there's an extra little bit on YouTube if you're watching on Facebook, and maybe head across there afterwards or head to our website to have a listen to that. But without further ado, here's a hand over to the message.
I love how relevant the Bible is. You know, when you read the Bible, I don't know how you find it, but so many of the stories, it could be like, even though they're from thousands of years ago, some of them a couple of thousand, some of them like 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, they can still speak to us today, and they're still so relevant to the same issues that we went through, that we go through. And there's a guy called Wayne Quadrado, and he's written a book called The Divine Mentor. It's absolutely brilliant, and if you ever have a chance to get it, or if you want to ask me afterwards about the title again, I can tell you. But it's all about the fact that he said in the Bible, we've got so many people who we can learn from and whose mistakes we can learn from. You know, when I was younger, I'm the youngest of five children, so I watched my brothers and sisters, okay? I watched the stuff they got in trouble for. And when they got in trouble for something, I learned that either I had to do it differently or I had to be smarter than them. Do you know what I'm talking about? If you're the youngest sibling, you know this. You learn from somebody else's mistakes. I know Sam's looking at David there as if, yeah, that's what happens. But that's what I did. And the Bible is a bit like having an older brother or sister. You know, we can learn from their mistakes. We can look at it and go, all right, that's how they messed up. I'm not going to do it that way. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. And The Divine Mentor, it's a brilliant book, just talking about how you learn from the mistakes you make. But in the same way that as a younger sibling, we can learn from the mistakes of our older siblings and not do the same thing, or at least work out how not to get caught doing the same thing. Today, we're going to continue with the series of conversations with Jesus. And I love these conversations with Jesus because I sort of put myself in the place of the person who is talking to Jesus. And today it's all about a pushy parent. It was about a mother of two of the disciples who was a bit pushy. Because you know what, mums have this tendency sometimes, and dads as well, of wanting to push their kids. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Anyone had a pushy parent? My mum was a little bit pushy. I want you to do well. Sam and David, don't put your hands up, okay? Okay, just in case. But sometimes we all experience that being pushed forward. I remember once having one dad come up to me and he said, how can my son get trials for Manchester United? I went, what? He went, how do I get my son to have trials for Manchester United? I went, what? I'm not being funny. I'd seen his kid play football. His kid couldn't kick a football to save his life. But he was desperate for his son to play for Manchester United. He was pushing his son. And I said to his son one day, do you like football? He said, no, I hate it. And you know, sometimes parents can be really, really pushy. And they can push you forward. I've shared before in sermons how I was always made to be Joseph in the Nativity. Because my mum always pushed me forward. I absolutely hated it. There's encouragement and then there's pushy. You know, some parents, they're desperate for their children to go to Oxford University or the best school, not because they want their kid to do well. But the truth is, some parents, the reason they're pushy is because they want to brag. They want to turn around and go to somebody else. You know what my kid's doing? Yeah, my kid's at Oxford. Or my child's playing this. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, parents can be a bit pushy in doing that. And it's not just parents, because as people, we can want to be the best, the greatest. I'm not talking about wanting to do our best, but we can also just want to be the best. Does anyone know the expression the goat? If you call someone the goat, some of you do, some of you don't. It's an expression that's come around the last few years. It's greatest of all time, the goat. Okay, so if you ever see an emoji on your phone and you see like goat emoji and something else, it means the greatest ever. So they talk about Lionel Messi or Ronaldo as the greatest ever footballers. Okay, are they the goats? And so many of us would love to be the goat. We'd love to be the ones who are the greatest at everything, right at the beginning, better than anybody else. The problem is, whether the parents put pressure on us or we put pressure on ourselves, it can be so hard. But also, quite often, when parents put pressure on their children to be the best, and we put pressure on ourselves to be the best, often it requires us using other people and pushing other people down. And today I just want to flick to the story in Matthew chapter 20, because Jesus' disciples, two of them were James and John, and they had their mum, and there's some sort of connection. We think the mum might be called Salome. We're not sure. We think she might have been there at the cross when Jesus died and might have actually been connected to Jesus in some way. But she walks up to Jesus one day and she says these words. She says, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at the left in your kingdom." And Jesus says, "You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink a cup, the cup that I'm going to drink?" And they answered, "We can." Now, I don't know how you would feel, but imagine these guys were probably in their 30s or at least in their late teenagers, 20s. I think they could be slightly older. We're not 100% sure. But Jesus is just there with the disciples and their mum walks up. This is a really embarrassing moment. Okay, this is like your mum going to your boss and saying, "Oi, I want my kid to be promoted." Would you feel embarrassed about that? I certainly would. Okay. So she walks up to Jesus and she says, "Jesus, I want my sons to have their place in heaven when you rule. I want one of them sitting here and I want another one sitting here." Talk about pushy and big-headed. Okay. This really is a mum who was really trying her luck here. And I don't think she wanted this because she thought James and John would be the best for this role. I think she wanted it so in the future, in 1,000 years' time, she could walk around heaven and go, "Look, look, that's my son up there." You know the sort of people do that, don't you? That's what she wanted to do, the real motives. But it sounded all great, but Jesus says, "No, no." He says, "You don't know what you're asking." He says, "You don't know what you're asking." Because you see, there wasn't just two disciples that followed Jesus. There was 12 disciples. And James and John's mum, she wanted James and John to be more important than the other disciples. All she cared about was her sons. You know, Naomi had a colleague a few years ago when a parent rang up and a parent complained because their child wasn't in the top set. And the parent went, "Come on, my kid should be in the top set." And Naomi's friend turned around and said to the parent, she said, "Well, I've got 30 kids in that class. So which of the other children do you want to move down so I can put your child in the top?" It's really interesting when you think about it like that, isn't it? Because sometimes we just think about ourselves and we think about our own children and the people around us. But being a Christian isn't just about thinking about ourselves and our families. It's about thinking about other people as well and putting them before us. You know what, James and John, they were great guys. They followed Jesus, they loved Jesus. But what they were asking for was something that didn't line up with Jesus' teachings. They wanted to be the most important. And Jesus was saying, "You know what? That's not the right question to ask." I think a better question for James and John and their mum to ask wouldn't be, "Can we have the two best seats in heaven?" It should have been this: "Jesus, where would you want us to sit? Where am I created to be?" You know, you don't have to be the greatest. You just have to be where God placed you to be. You just have to be using the talents that God called you to give, to use. And Jesus, when he turned around to these disciples, he took this moment of this pushy mum who wanted her kids to be the best, and he changed it, and he does this brilliantly all the time. He just turns it into this beautiful teaching moment, And he says this. He says, you know what? It's not about being the best. It's not about having the best seats. Are you prepared to suffer for me? I read this the other day. It's from a runner. And the runner's Adrahand Finn. I can't quite pronounce his name. Okay, I think he's Irish. And he said this. If happiness wasn't comfort, was it somehow to be found in the uncomfortable? Or did suffering a little somehow make us stronger and more fulfilled and a more fulfilled human being? You know, guys, sometimes we think that what we want, what God needs to do is need to give, if he gives us that job, everything will be great. If he just changes our situation, everything will be great. If he gets our kids into the best school, everything will be great. If this happened, everything will be great. And we go, God, please, could you do this for me? Please, can you make me look better than my friends? If I look better than my friends, everything will be okay. And Jesus says, no. Jesus says, if you want success, if you want to be important in my kingdom, then he says this, you will have to suffer. And he goes a bit further than that. He says, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or my left is not for me to grant. These are the places that belong to those who have been prepared by my Father. Whoever wants to become great amongst you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And Jesus, he turns everything on its head. He said, it's not about being the best. It's literally just about serving and doing the best you can do. If you want to be the greatest, he's like, well, you won't get as big a reward as you think. But if you're happy to serve where you are, to make a difference where you are, he said, that's what being a Christian is about. That's what being a Christ follower is about. He said, being honored by God and being lifted up by God, it's not about walking in and trying to position yourself in that place. It's about serving. It's not about being the best. Honor comes from hard work, from honoring others, from rejection, from pain, from setback, and becoming the person that God has created you to be. Guys, I'm a really, really competitive person. If anyone knows me, my children don't like playing board games against me because I always want to win. Is anyone else like that, or is that just me? Does anyone want to win? I always want to win at absolutely everything. My wife, on a Saturday afternoon, I follow Blackburn Rovers. There's two Stoke City fans here, so I don't know how to talk about it. I'm not even going to talk about Neymar and Manchester City because it would make me sick at the moment. But when on Saturday afternoon, when the result comes through for my football team, Naomi gets a, oh, not again. Okay, real frustration because my team's lost. I hate losing at anything. When I was younger, me and my brother would always be trying to cheat because he always wanted to win. Okay, I'm a really competitive person. So winning's good. But the problem with winning is this. Is that if you make your life just about being the greatest person ever, you're going to put an immense pressure on yourself. And you're really going to struggle. But if you do what Jesus says instead, you do your best, but rather than trying to become the greatest, you become the least and serve other people. You take the pressure off yourself. That's when you start to experience life and life to the full. You know, we can feel sometimes as kids, we can feel, and adult children as well as young kids, we can feel the pressure to become the greatest. We feel the pressure to do certain things because what will my family think if I don't? What will my friends think if I don't? Even as we get older, we can feel our pressure, maybe from our kids, to be the best. But it's not about being the best. It's not about going to the right university or having the best job. That's all great. The most important thing is us to say to God, not God, please make me the greatest, but God, where do you want me to sit? What do you want me to do? Can we say that together? God, where do you want me to sit? What do you want me to do?
Hey guys, welcome to our Sunday supplement. It's a chance for us just to talk a bit more from the message that I shared in church from Matthew chapter 20. James and John, their mother walks up to Jesus, just recap it quickly, and says, I want them to have the top role in your kingdom, God. And Jesus is like, hang on a minute. There's a lot more to it than that. Firstly, you don't get to choose who has a top role. Secondly, you need to be a servant-hearted. And Jesus sort of twists on the head, basically, a lot of our own motives and ambitions. Because a lot of us, we want to be top dog. We want to be the boss. We would like to make the decisions. We think we have everything right in our heads and everyone else is wrong. And a lot of our motives are wrong. And in the story, Jesus challenges us. And he says, guys, the most important thing for you to do is to be selfless and to become like a servant and not be about just wanting the status and be the boss and wanting everything your own way, but actually to look at other people first. And this is a real challenge because we live in a culture that's very, very selfish. Guys, you know, if you're old enough to remember David Janella, when he did his hair, I think it was L'Oreal, and he went through his hair. I wish I had that long hair like he had. And he basically turned around and said, you need to have L'Oreal because you're worth it. And he did this massive pose. And that you must have the shampoo because you're worth it. You must have the latest phone because you're worth it. You must have the latest car because you deserve it. These ideas keep coming through. And it's quite a selfish idea that permeates through our culture. And it goes a bit further even to our parenting. A lot of us, we're quite selfish when it comes to our children. I remember a while ago, my child missed out on a cooking club. And I was like, oh my goodness, what do the other kids get to go to cooking clubs? And then I found myself actually looking at those kids who probably deserved it more than my daughter and thought, why do they get to have it? They always get to have stuff. And I had to look at my motive in my heart and say, you know what, Jim, the other kid needs it. Their background, they need it more than you need it and more than Sophia needs it. So cut the kid a bit of slack. And as I shared earlier about that story with Naomi and in the school, where they, when a colleague turned around to the one mum and said, you may feel your child is deserving of a top space in the top set, but which of those other 30 kids do you want to move down? Because you may feel you're standing up for your child, but actually what you're really doing is you're saying my child is more important than anyone else, and you're actually being quite selfish. And this idea of a selfishness permeates through. You know, we think we deserve a pay rise because we're working hard. But what about everyone else around us is working hard? We think that we deserve a break because, you know, everyone else seems to get a break and we haven't. Actually, there's probably a lot of people who are in a worse situation than you're in. And the selfishness is, goes quite deep into our souls. And James and John and their mother, they were asking the question of being top dog, of being wanting to be really high up in the kingdom of God, for the wrong motives. It wasn't because necessarily they deserved it, but they just wanted the status. They wanted people to look up to them. They felt, you know what, we're working really hard. They forgot about the other 10 disciples and what they were doing. And you know what, we need to challenge ourselves, because Jesus says it's about serving and not being served. I was reading a book recently called The Motive. It's a business leadership book by Patrick Lencioni, and he talks about motives with leaders. And he said leadership motives go into two categories. It's a bit generalist, but I think we get the point. The first one is, first leadership motive is this, someone who serves to make a difference. And he said the other alternative leadership motive is someone who just does it for the reward. And you've got the people who lead and want to make a difference in lives, and they do what they do because they want to make a difference in people's lives. They want to serve other people. They want to do something great in life. Then you've got the other ones who just do it because they just want to get the reward, whether it's people's adulation or money or status. And that comment that Patrick Lencioni says here, I'm sure can actually relate to the rest of our life. We have those who do things just because they want the reward from it, whether they want to serve other people, they want to like be part of community groups, not because they want to help people. It's because they like the dopamine hit of the feeling good like hormone that we get when we serve other people. You know, oh, that feels nice. And they want that hit. Not to make a difference in people's lives, because they don't feel good. Or we have the other people who maybe serve because they want to look good. It looks good on the CV. And they don't do it because they care about people. They do it because they want it on their CV. Or you have the other ones who may be doing it because they're trying to impress somebody else. And they want to, they think that this is the way of doing it. I mean, you've seen it when MPs or candidates, when they want to get into become an MP and they're campaigning. Have you noticed how much they serve? And they do it because they want to look like they care. And guys, that's a wrong motive to have. And that's a motive that Jesus said isn't right. You shouldn't be doing it just to be seen. But actually, the motive we should have is about serving people just because we want to serve people. About being servants because we're following Jesus's example and just loving people for the sake of loving them. Serving them for the sake of serving them. Serving God for the sake of serving them. Not going for the reward. We might trick ourselves sometimes to think we've got the right motives. But as that famous verse in 1 Samuel says, God looks on the inside when man looks on the outside. And God knows what's going on really inside. And often we know secretly what's going on inside, whatever we tell people publicly. And guys, you know what? This Christianity is not about going after the reward. Christianity is about serving. And Jesus says this. You know, other religions teach you that if you're good enough, you might get into heaven. If you're good enough, your reward is heaven. If you're good enough, your reward is you might get a blessing. If you're good enough, if you do this enough, if you do that, your reward will be, your reward will be, your reward will be. And Christianity is not like that. When Jesus came to die for us, he sort of got rid of all of that. And he says, no, guys, it's different. It's not just about us. It's not about us being self-centered. It's actually about thinking of others. It's not thinking about, I might try and be good enough to impress God. But it's about a relationship. John Mark Comer phrased it beautifully when he says this, God isn't a doctrine. He isn't a question on a multiple choice exam that you can study to get it right so you can get into heaven. He's a person who wants a relationship with you. And relationships work both ways. You know, relationships or about our relationship with God especially, is about him wanting the best for us and us wanting the best for him. That's how a relationship works best, when it's mutual, when it works together. Now, let's be honest, our relationship's not really that mutual with God. He gives a lot more than we can ever give to him, and we kind of rely on him being available to us. But God's called us to be in a relationship with him. He's called it not to be about going after the rewards. We're not in a relationship with God to go after rewards, but relationship with him for us to do the best for him and him to do the best for us. That doesn't mean God uses us. And then that means that God, sorry, it doesn't mean, it means that God doesn't just use us and chuck us away. But God actually wants to help us to achieve the most, our most potential. In the same way, we shouldn't be using God to get what we want. And guys, it's really, really hard. You know, as Christians, encourage us, let's mirror Jesus. Let's be servant-hearted Christians who serve out of relationship to make a difference. It's not about the status, not about the dopamine hit that we get when we help others. It's not about trying to impress that girl and trying to show her that you're a good Christian. It's not about pretending to be a devoted Jesus follower. It's just about serving people and serving God with pure motives. To nick a phrase from Patrick Lencioni, Jesus calls us to live joyfully difficult, selfless lives. I love that. Joyfully difficult, selfless lives. But when we do this, when we live joyfully difficult, selfish lives that are tough, that means we don't always get things the way we want. It's not all about the reward, and actually times it's going to be really tough being a Christian. But when we live joyfully selfless Christianity, we live joyfully selfless lives. Do you know what we do? We give people around us hope. We help people around us find fulfillment. We help people around us find life. We help people around us discover that they're not by themselves. And we help people around us discover Jesus. So guys, Jesus is challenging here. It's not about just serving for serving's sake. It's about serving to bring hope into the world. It's about serving to be selfless, to reflect the Savior who came down from heaven to live an example for us. It's about joy, living joyfully difficult and selfless lives. And I want to encourage you, don't be about you. Let's live counter lives. Let's not live about like Gentiles. You know, when Jesus referred to the Gentiles in this passage, the Gentiles is like a euphemism for those who don't know God. And he says, we're called to live differently. Don't live like you don't love God and you don't love him. Don't live like a Gentile. Instead, live like a Christian. Live like a follower of Jesus. Live like someone who's in relationship with him, who knows they're secure and loved, who knows they're getting into heaven, and knows that they can't do anything to impress God. But instead, out of that relationship with God, we live joyfully selfless, joyfully difficult even, and selfless lives. I encourage you guys, let's keep doing this. Let's live the way that Jesus has called us to do. Guys, you know what? It's going to be hard. It's going to be challenging. But I'm cheering you on all the way. Have a brilliant day.